Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility presents The Vermont Conversation with David Goodman, exploring ideas with innovators, change makers, business leaders, politicians, and activists. This special feature from Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility is underwritten in part by the Alchemist Brewery of Waterbury and Stowe, a proud B Corp using the power of business to support a clean environment and economic opportunity for all. Green Mountain Power, delivering clean, cost-effective, and highly reliable power to customers and offering cutting-edge products and services to reduce costs and carbon. UVM Medical Center, Burlington, Vermont, the heart and science of medicine. Stowe Cider, with crisp, clean, and creative award-winning flavors. Visit the tasting room in Stowe or buy Stowe Cider throughout New England, upstate New York, and Washington, D.C. Let's Grow Kids, a statewide campaign about the need for more high-quality, affordable childcare in Vermont to better support our children, families, communities, and economy. Concept 2, designers and manufacturers of Concept 2 rowing oars, indoor rower, ski erg, and bike erg, and proud to support nonprofit groups such as Salvation Farms, which nourishes Vermont by distributing produce that farmers can't sell, as well as nearly 700 VBSR business members who believe that sustainable business practices value people, planet, and profit. Learn more at www.vbsr.org. Welcome to the Vermont Conversation. I'm David Goodman. This week, we're going to look at what happened in the Vermont legislature during the 2019 session that has just adjourned. We'll discuss who won, who lost, and what's still in play. To have this conversation, we'll talk later in the show by checking in with some of the state's leading advocacy groups to get their take on the progress made on key legislation. But first, in our first half hour, we're joined by Representative Maxine Grad. Grad is chairperson of the House Judiciary Committee. She represents Waitsfield, Duxbury, Facetown, Warren, and Moortown. This is Representative Grad's 19th year as a state representative. This year saw her featured in a New York Times article about Vermont's landmark abortion rights law that is now on Governor Scott's desk. I spoke with Representative Grad in the WDEV studios this morning. Maxine Grad, welcome to the Vermont Conversation.
Thank you.
You, as the chair of the Judiciary Committee, talk about what you think are some of the highlights of what came out of your committee. You have been dealing with a lot of hot-button issues, from abortion to handgun, you know, waiting a delay period on handgun purchases to drug testing. Where do we stand here in early June, and what do you think were the biggest accomplishments?
Okay, great. So in terms of where we stand, we are waiting to see what the governor will do with S-169, which is a bill pertaining to waiting periods for handguns. We should know by Monday. Also, H-57, which is the reproductive rights bill, we'll also should know soon. In terms of accomplishments, it was, frankly, I thought it was a great year for Judiciary Committee. Just in terms of my work, I like to talk about my work as workforce development through sound justice reform. And so making sure that we have a justice system that works for everyone and access to justice, which is Vermonter's constitutional right, you know, access to the courts. And so when folks do have access to justice, they can participate more fully in their communities and the workforce. So to that end, I think H-330, which eliminates the statute of limitations for child sexual abuse cases, that has been signed by the governors. I think that is really an extraordinary accomplishment.
Yeah, let's talk about that. This is a very significant change in how people can be held accountable for sexual abuse.
Exactly. And again, this is in civil litigation, so this is not in a criminal court. This is not where somebody goes to jail. We actually did eliminate the statute of limitations for sexual assault about 4 years ago.
And so what have the statute of limitations been?
So for child sexual abuse cases, they're just 6 years from discovery. which is a very, very short time. We now know that it could take victims years. The average time for a victim of child abuse is 52 years old. So it's very, very significant. And we know that child abuse causes extreme economic and social hardship to victims. Often there's a lot of substance abuse.
I know that in December, one of the people who came to speak in favor of this and encourage action on this was an Olympic gymnast. Talk about what her message was and who she is.
Right. So so her message was that that victims need healing and they need access to justice. And so while I wasn't there at that conference, the lead sponsor of the bill, Martin Lalonde, who's on my committee, he and I were co-sponsors. He was there. And so he was very, very touched and very motivated by that conference. And so my hope is that this bill will bring healing to victims, and by allowing victims access to the courts, will really they'll be able to seek justice, and that is really a very important part of their healing.
It strikes me that, you know, as Vermont is dealing with national issues around abortion rights, and of course, people who read the New York Times a couple weeks ago may have been surprised to come across a photo of you and Representative Ann Pugh for your sponsorship of the abortion rights legislation.
Right.
Vermont seems to be going against the national tide on a number of these issues, particularly with abortion rights, where we're seeing effectively abortion being banned in a number of states if this is left to stand in Alabama, Louisiana, Ohio, Missouri. Why is it? How do you explain to people from outside Vermont, why is it that Vermont is sailing in a different direction?
I think that Vermont is a libertarian state, and I think civil liberties, personal liberties are very important to Vermonters, and reproductive health and access to abortion is a civil liberty. It's a liberty issue. So
what kind of, I mean, these have been enormously emotional bills, particularly we talk about handguns, abortion rights. You've moved on both of these, the handgun waiting period. What has it been like holding hearings on these issues?
It has been hard. It's been very emotional. It's been frightening.
What do you mean?
By frightening?
Yeah.
Some of the emails I've gotten, some of the comments I've gotten, some of the names I've been called, some of the posts on Facebook. One in particular was a closed Facebook group that the Capitol Police actually have been monitoring. I didn't know about it, but they saw it, and this was in around the handgun waiting period debate, and my name was mentioned, my address was mentioned, there was a call to action to go to my house, and I very much appreciate the Capitol Police, Department of Public Safety, Governor's Office, took it very seriously.
Which of these issues elicits the most, you know, the hottest reaction of all the ones you deal with?
You know, it's hard to say because I think both abortion and firearm safety they're pretty close.
Talk about what the firearm safety measure does, and this has gone through, it evolved as it made its way through the House and Senate and back. So where did it begin and where did it end, and what are you hoping the governor does?
Okay, so where it began in the Senate. I think there were a few different bills in terms of waiting periods after background check before somebody can actually purchase a firearm. I think there was maybe a few bills. One had 72 hours, 48 hours. There were also a number of bills that either repealed or changed some of the laws that we passed last year regarding transfer of large capacity magazines and firearms. So there was trying to, you know, peel back action that we took last year. And then also there was some clarification that that HIPAA will not be violated if a mental health care provider, you know, questions about whether or not a extreme risk relief prevent, get that right, or extreme risk prevention order is granted. So it was a number of different things. And then it really became a compromise in the Senate.
So what was left was
one thing that would be repealed was a sunset on shooting competitions. So when we passed the big firearm prevention bill, S-55 last year, we realized that these shooting competitions were economic drivers, important events, but they involved bringing in the large capacity magazine that we had banned. And so we said, well, okay, well, we'll let them happen until July 1 of this year, 2019, but after that, no longer. So one thing the bill S-169 did is it repealed the sunset, which means it removed that sunset and allows the shooting competitions to go on. And so that's very important to folks. And it allows people who are coming to the competitions to bring firearms that were otherwise, that are otherwise banned in Vermont.
I know that a big part of the impetus for the waiting period around mm-hmm. firearms was around suicide prevention. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was testimony that you heard that persuaded you?
Right. So the waiting period and whether it's 24 hours, 48, 72, it's an interruption. And we heard testimony saying that it's a like a speed bump, a blip in the road. It's enough to just stop that impetuous cycle, that thinking. And so that's what's really important, that there's that there is a waiting period. So it's not so much the time, whether it's, 24 hours or longer. It's really just, you know, just that waiting period. And it's not only in terms of, suicide prevention, but domestic violence related homicides. And then also, gun related crimes. We heard that, that drug traffickers, for instance, will come to Vermont because they know they can, you know, they can buy their gun and make that drug deal. If there's a waiting period, you know, Vermont's not as attractive because, you know, can't wait, you know, to do those deals. So it really, in terms of public safety and public health, those waiting periods do go, you know, quite a long ways. And the testimony was quite compelling.
You're listening to the Vermont Conversation. We're speaking this half hour with Representative Maxine Grad. She is the chair of the House Judiciary Committee in the Vermont Legislature. Some of the other issues that have come up that your committee touched on was around searches and cooperation between local police forces and ICE, the immigration authorities. And recently there was a roadblock on Route 2 up in the islands, the Champlain Islands. I think many people have been surprised to see these roadblocks appearing. What can be done? What is being done about it?
Right. So I think you're referring to the Fair and Impartial Policing Bill that that came out of my committee. And so I think training is very important in terms of training law enforcement and understanding the fair and impartial policies that model policies have been enacted and making sure that that law enforcement is being trained to the policies. And I think we are making progress. I think ultimately finding out that some of our federal laws are unconstitutional is the hope of many of us.
Like what?
In terms of participation with with ICE and Border Patrol and just how much local law enforcement, you know, can and can't do because of that relationship and sort of federal precedents, federal law, I mean. So we're waiting on that. There are a number of lawsuits about that. But it is an issue. We need to keep looking at it. We need to keep bringing, make sure that everybody's at the table. Because these really are, they're real stories.
Now, my understanding is that ICE claims as its jurisdiction anywhere within 100 miles of the border, which is most of the state.
Exactly.
So what does that mean in practice? And what are you hearing is coming of that?
There's real concern. And, you know, I think we're trying to get a different interpretation of that. And I mean, like you said, it's the whole state and just doesn't make sense.
Another issue, a big issue that's been kicking around the legislature and through your committee is the issue of a tax and regulate system for marijuana, and particularly your piece of it, the drug testing portions of it. So what happened around that?
Right. So there was a lot of interest in saliva testing, especially on the part of the governor and roadside safety. And so that's where my committee came in and looked at saliva testing. And certainly we're all very concerned about, you know, highway safety, regardless of legalization of cannabis. But we learned, as we have learned in the past, that there really isn't an accurate test for impairment. Unlike alcohol, where we do have an accurate test that can detect, you know, impairment as well as presence, not the same with cannabis and other drugs. And so that's concerning.
Do you think that should stop the state from having a system of legal sales?
I don't, because I think we have other tools for highway safety. We have our drug recognition experts. A-Ride training is another type of training that law enforcement goes through. And so making sure that all law enforcement has A-Ride training, which is now the case just in, you know, the past few years. But and I think there are other tests that are out there that our DREs, our drug recognition experts, are learning. I think, you know, we could look at a saliva test not as a roadside test, but maybe perhaps back at the barracks as a, you know, as an evidentiary test. We recommended to do that with a warrant, like you do with blood. But you know, I think until the science is there, I don't think it's good policy.
So what is it going to take? We now have this strange system where it is legal to use marijuana but not legal to buy it, which is
right.
Essentially, you know, puts a flashing light on the black market to say open for business.
Right.
What's it going to take to get past this law, you know, this roadblock?
It's a good question.
And the other part of it is it's now legal for sale in Massachusetts, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Is New York?
Not sure about New York, but Canada.
Canada. Yeah.
Maine. And then also, if you look by population in terms of the West, you know, the majority of the country lives in legal states. So I don't know. I hope we can continue the conversation about current tools on highway safety and really realize that saliva test is not the end all and be all, that we do have other tools. And in fact, actually, law enforcement presence on the road is really apparently one of the best measures in terms of deterring, you know, impaired driving. And so and education, you know, hopefully through more education and sort of myth busting. I mean, I think there's a lot of fear. I think there are a lot of myths in terms of what has happened in other states in terms of increase in impaired driving. And so I think hopefully with more conversation and more education, we'll realize that we do need to move forward.
So the session ended without closure on a number of issues. People are hearing about minimum wage, about paid family leave. What happened at the end, in your view, with the Speaker adjourning the House, the Senate staying open, adjourning, you know, days later? It looked like it ended in disarray, failure, whatever have you, to indicate dysfunction. How would you characterize it?
Certainly a disagreement between the House and the Senate, and also a disagreement amongst House Democrats in terms of what policies they wanted to move forward. However, this was the first year of a biennium, so it's not like we're packing home and going up for good. We can come back in January. Talks can also happen over the summer. So I'm hopeful that we will get to a minimum wage bill that really meets the needs of, you know, of all Vermonters and really moves forward, as well as family leave.
Do you think there was damage done by the way that it ended in terms of, you know, the political balance of power in the state, where you have a Republican governor, two houses controlled by Democrats who couldn't agree? What's the political fallout from this?
I guess I'm more hopeful. I think if you asked me maybe a week ago, I would have said there might be political fallout, but I'm hopeful that people are looking back at it and reflecting, but also wanting to move forward and seeing it as an opportunity to say, okay, how can we get back? How can we do the best we can for Vermonters? Because I think in the end, we have a shared vision.
What are the big items on your agenda that now you'll be waiting until the next session in January to pick up?
Well, we did do an expungement bill that we didn't get to talk about.
So tell us about it.
Okay, so this is expungement of certain crimes. So when somebody has a criminal record, it really, again, going back to workforce development, it really impacts their ability to find employment, housing, serve in the military, a number of collateral consequences, economic barriers. So over the past number of years, we've been looking at different crimes and saying, you know, what should be, we call it a qualifying crime. What should somebody be able to go to court after a number of years and petition and say, you know, I've paid my restitution, I've done my time, whatever, but I want to move on. And so we have been looking at that. We've been looking especially in terms of crimes that are related to substance abuse disorder, and that really the traditional sort of criminal justice response doesn't make sense, and people really should be able to get on with their lives. So expungement, and I think we're going to continue to look at more crimes and to see if people should be able to expunge their records. Juvenile justice is another area that we didn't get to talk about, but we're in the process of implementing a law that raises the age of family court jurisdiction to 18 and 19 year olds. So there's a whole concept of, I think the new term is emerging adults, that, you know, we hear a lot about brain science and that that adolescents' brains don't develop until 25 in young women and 26 in young men. And so when we have adolescents doing things that are quote-unquote criminal in nature, is the best response to treat them in our traditional punitive criminal justice responses, or are services more appropriate? And that's where we're going.
Do we even have the services to be able to expand, you know, into that 18 to 26 age group?
So we're not up to 26, but right now 18, 19. Some states have moved to 21. We do have the services, and it's also a matter of proper risk analysis and identification. It is certainly resource intensive, but I think in the end, it's the best public safety, public health policy, and this is something with broad agreement from the administration. This isn't a partisan issue.
You have been in the state representative for 19 years.
Right.
Why do you do this work?
I love it. I just feel like I'm doing the people's work and being able to make a difference in people's lives. You know, when there's a victim of child sexual assault who reaches out to me and talks to me about his experience and follows a bill that I'm working on, and then I see it to passage, that's very rewarding.
What do you consider the most rewarding thing you've done in your time?
That's hard.
What are you proudest of?
Yeah, well, I am very proud of recently removing the statute of limitations, child abuse cases, also removing the statute of limitations in sexual assault cases, a lot of the victims' work that I've done, and then certainly the firearm safety, and this, you know, school safety. Those are issues very near and dear to my heart.
Okay, well, Representative Maxine Grad, I want to thank you for joining us on the Vermont Conversation.
Great, thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Representative Maxine Grad. She's chair of the House Judiciary Committee in the Vermont Legislature. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking with a variety of advocates about what won, what lost in the legislature this session. I also wanted to mention I'll be speaking tomorrow, Thursday, at the UVM Alumni House. The topic is Truth, Propaganda, and Media in the Age of Trump. And now we'll cut to news.